Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome. I'm Kay Thompson, and I am with
Jess Sandberg.
And we are here, and we're going to bring you an exciting show today. And I want to say just a little bit, you know, a little bit under the weather today. You'll have to forgive me. Got a cold and all that kind of stuff like us.
That's your problem.
Thank you very much.
Don't sneeze over here.
I'm going to try very hard not to. But anyway, we're going to be talking to a very exciting guest, a friend of mine, a friend of yours, you remember, Glenda Taylor,
yes.
Who is an author and a writer. And she has written the books that I have been quoting during the time, you know, that we've been here on, you know, Kay and Gus Show here on Blog Talk Radio. Want to tell people, right off the bat, we're going to give people a phone number just in case they want to call in to talk to Glenda. The number, everyone, is 323-679-0906. That's 323-679-0906. And the person that we're going to be talking to, as I said, is Glenda Taylor. Now, before we even start with Glenda, Gus, you know what I'm going to be doing? Since she is a writer and an author, and I have been talking about her books, you know, for a long period of time, even when I was over on WRD, she starts out with one of the books that she had written. As a matter of fact, this is a book of African-American women from the 1860s through the 1950s. And Glenda will tell us what her purpose was in writing this book. In other words, as you can see, there's not that much of the written word. But if you look, you see nothing but what?
Pictures.
Black and white pictures, sepia pictures, really, of African-American women from the 1860s to the 1950s. And if you open it, this is all you see.
Well, I have a question for you.
Yes.
When are you going to write your book that you've been talking about for at least 20 years?
Do you really want me to write my book?
No, I want you to tell me when you're going to do it.
Maybe it'll include you in my book.
I'm going to leave town when you start
see
writing.
That? See that? When you start this, you get yourself into trouble, right?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we're going to be getting Glenda Taylor on the phone. Oh, by the way, you know, I have to mention that Ashford and Simpson, you know, Ashford passed, and the Anson and Simpson duo, and boy, I'm saying, what an era, what an artist.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we wanted to mention that and make sure that people understood that. So we wouldn't pass another minute without mentioning, you know, Ashford and Simpson. What a loss. But anyway, I want to say thank you to the people here at BW Moving Images. This is the Kay and Gus Show, and we are on Blog Talk Radio, and we're going to be on for 1 hour. You can make your calls at 323-679-0906. That's 323-679-0906. And BW Moving Images, the executive producer is Tylon Eusebio Washington. Our online engineer is Shauna Glover. Our studio engineer and producer is Tylon Washington. Our producer is Lisa Payne and Ayana Jones. And so we're going to be getting right to it. But you know, I think, Gus, before you do that,
you told them everything except the glorious city in which we are located.
We're in Jersey City, New Jersey.
Okay.
And we were having a little difficulty getting here. But, you know, we are going to schedule to another person that we had scheduled for tonight. And what we were going to talk about and say, Glenda, you know, for another night, is what it was like during the times of, and you remember this, during times of about the, late 50s, early 60s in New York.
I wasn't around then.
You were? No. Weren't you doing Positively Black about that time?
Oh, I forgot.
Oh, right. So we're going to be talking about a number of things with Blackwood Davis as soon as we can get him in here. And we're going to be talking about the current of the community, the climate of the community during the Wannabrolla case, doing the police brutality cases, for instance, the Yusef Hawkins case, et cetera, and so many others, Crown Heights disturbance, the teens who were accused of wilding in Central Park, and of course the police had to back down off that. We're going to be trying to get Anna Phillips, who was one of the main reporters on that at that time here. And we're going to be talking about the lack of the Civilian Review Board. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Yeah. There were, you know, people were calling with so many, you know, complaints about the police department. And we were talking to the Guardians at that time. And as a matter of fact, I had a segment called Police Report. And that meant that people could call with problems because they, you know, that were police, you know, oriented, I should say. Because the fact that the civilian police, civilian and the civilian blue, the civilian police boards.
Take your time, Kay.
All right, the civilian. What do I want to say? The civilian
review board.
The civilian review boards weren't doing an adequate job in supporting the community. Also, we wanted to talk about the New Jersey State Police again. Now, this is like, you know, history revisited. There was a big thing about the state police in New Jersey, all around the country, you know, at that particular time. And now it's rearing its ugly head again, you know, in New Jersey. So a lot of other things. Also, we wanted to say congratulations to the Reverend Al Sharpton. You know, as you know, he now has been officially made host of his own show there on MSNBC.
He's come a long way.
Yeah, yeah. You knew him a long time ago, right?
Yes.
Uh-huh. When was the first time that you met Al?
The first time he was on my show
uh-huh.
on Positively Black.
Mm-hmm.
And he was out picketing a major corporation and was in the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
So here was this then kid out there around Columbus Circle in New York, picketing, traffic jams, everything.
Yeah.
And sounded like an interesting person. So I went out there and met him on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And that was where he and I first met.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting? Well, I'm really tickled about the fact that he is doing his own show. Long time coming, and what he has to say is absolutely necessary. But first of all, you know, we're going to be taking a break very shortly. It's 323-679-0906, everyone. The number is 323-679-0906 for you to call in. And you're going to be able to talk to Glenda Taylor. You're going to be able to talk to Gus Henningberg. And you're going to be able to talk to me, Kay Thompson.
And when are you going to arrange it so that the people who call you can come and see you?
I don't know. What is there something you have in mind, or is there something that Ty and Ayanna and Shauna have in mind?
No, I'm asking.
Well, what do you think we should do, Gus Henningberg, my partner, holy host, holy host of the show?
I didn't say what are we going to do. I said what are you going
to
do?
Well, that's a wonderful suggestion. I'll have to talk to Ty and Sandy Washington about that.
Absolutely.
You think that we're going to be doing our videos that we've done over the years? The
possibly.
Conversations and stories that we've done?
Possibly.
That's a lot of stories.
Well, we'll pick and choose.
Well, before we go for break and before we go to Glenda, who was your most exciting or interesting interview, I should say?
Exciting and interesting are not the same.
All right. Exciting number one, interesting number two.
I have to think about that for
okay.
a minute.
Okay.
There were too many of them to be able to answer that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Off the top of my head.
I can think of something right away. Well, you first, of course. You were my most exciting interview. And then when I met Dr. Yosef Ben-Yekinen, because they had Dr. Ben, Gil Noble had Dr. Ben on his show. And of course, you know, we're saying prayers for Gil now. And but that's when I met Dr. Ben. As a matter of fact, I was over at National Action Network a couple of weeks ago. Hoping to see Dr. Ben, but he wasn't there.
Uh-huh.
So we're probably going to make another trip again one time too. Anyway, we're coming down to a break, I think, right now. Don't forget the number for you to call is 323-679-0906. That's 323-679-0906. 0906. And we are taking a break right now, and we will be right back, everyone.
That's coming, but I know. Change has got to come now. Ooh, yes, it is. It's been too hard living, oh, and I'm afraid to die. I don't know what's up there beyond the flat. It's been a long time coming. I know. Change has got to come. Oh, yes, it is. There's a time I will go to my brother. Oh. I've asked my brother, will you help me? Oh.
And we are back. Kay Thompson and
Gus Hanningberg.
And we are here for our show, The Kay and Gus Show, here on Blog Talk Radio. When you turn to or you type in Blog Talk Radio, then all you have to do is type in The Kay and Gus Show. And the name K is spelled K-A-E. And then you'll be able to get...
Wait, how do you spell Gus?
You spell K, K-A-E. And Gus, G-U-S.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. Well, people know how to spell Gus.
They ought to know how to spell K, too.
Anyway, Glenda Taylor is on the phone right now. Glenda, hi. How are you? Glenda Taylor, are you there?
Yes, I am.
How are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. So good to be talking to you and to finally get to talk to you about the books, because I've been talking about them for months, you know. So, Glenda, what I'm going to be doing is I want to give an introduction, you know, the introduction that you wrote regarding Don Imus. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, and then we're going to ask you some stuff, all right? Don Imus, naturally, and this is from Glenda's book, Truth Beyond Illusion, and this is African-American Women, 1860s to 1950s. Now, Glenn, you wrote in the introduction, Don Imus, nationally known radio and television commentator, called a group of African-American female basketball players nappy-headed hoes and jigaboos. Outraged, the African-American community demanded an apology and insisted that he be fired. Imus gave a seemingly heartfelt apology and berated himself for allowing such disparaging comments to fall recklessly from his tongue. He had let down his gun, and was fully relaxed and accustomed to freely expressing himself. The interesting part of the incident was that he fell victim to his subconscious ramblings, the subconscious ramblings of many Americans. And then you say that since the African-American woman arrived in the Americas, she was considered a piece of property. She was referred to as a whore and a wench. She was physically, sexually, verbally, and mentally abused, and you go on from there. You know I love the book. Now, the book is, you give this introduction to set up a gallery. Well, maybe you can tell us all about it. What is your gallery? What is this book all about?
Well, basically, it's photographs of African-American women from the 1860s until the 1950s, and they're just beautiful photographs of showing them and how they're dressed and their hairstyles, which are, you know, what you see in the book is very different from the images that you've seen in the media in the early 50s and the 60s of black women.
And how did you happen to put this together, Gwen?
Well, I'm a collector. I can't help myself. And what happens is I've been collecting photographs for maybe like about 25 years. And after that Don Imus, you know, incident,
yeah,
I just felt that it was our responsibility to do something about our image. Because if we don't take control of our image, that's it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, how did you get the pictures? I mean, the pictures all look like relatives.
Well, a few of them are relatives, maybe like about 10% or 15%.
Relatives. I mean, these represent all black women, I think.
Yeah, 85% of them. I used to go to antique shops. I went around to different antique shops, and you'd find that rare photograph of black, and it, just over a period of time, and then I got to, with other collectors, and, you know, I used to buy photographs from different collectors, and then and maybe like about 5% of them, I asked different friends of mine, like, what pictures do you have from the early 1900s of family members? So I just, you know, combined my personal collection with you know, photographs from different people.
The photographs that I've looked at thumbing through the book, I want to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
I was born and raised in the Deep South.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me all the women whose pictures are in this book came from the South. Is that true?
You know what? I can't say for sure. I would, if I had to guess, I would say that a majority of them did, not all of them, but because some of the photographs, I don't know where they came from. I had them dated by, you know, experts. Some of them I could tell you exactly where, but if I had to guess, I would say, like you said, the majority of them are from the South.
Well, my assumption that they are is based on what they're wearing.
But weren't African-American women wearing these kind of outfits from...
On 125th Street? No.
What do you say, Glenda? I think some of them probably were. Sure.
Some of them are Northerners. Like, I can't tell you the exact page, but some of them are Northerners. But I would say the majority of them are from the South.
Okay.
You know, and some of them, you know, they came from the South and they lived in the North, so... They're not all from the South.
But you have to.
You can't really say their roots, though. Because the person, you know, it depends on, like, the picture could have been taken one place, but, you know, where they ended up living. Like, say, for example, my relatives, which is a very small percentage, they originally come from the South, but some of the photographs, like, there's one photograph, like, that's on a bench, and that's taken in the North, and then there's another photograph where this woman, it's about the 50s, it's in front of a brownstone, so, but she is from the South, but it's in front of a brownstone that was taken in New York.
I see. But now these pictures are, it's a book of pictures.
Mm-hmm.
It's very little writing. And it
You're
is
right.
Powerful because it is a book of African American women. It is unique. I've never seen a book like this before.
I just thought the photographs were so great in the way they were dressed,
yeah,
and the clothes and the different hairstyles, because, you know, because you start collecting something and then you really don't realize what you have. You know, you just realize, oh, wow, this is a nice picture, and then you have it individually. And then I just decided, you know, this is something that I need to share, because
right.
I something that I mentioned in the beginning of the book is that the person who taught me about the antique business, he told me that he has over 10,000 photographs of black women, black men, you know, black people. And
yeah,
he said he got most of his photographs because they were just thrown in the garbage. And that when, you know, people died, the children just threw it away. And they didn't know the people or they didn't really care. And they just threw, you know, the photographs away. And that's our history. You're throwing away our history when you throw away those photographs. So I felt that if I put them in a book, that, you know, if all of, you know, my photographs got destroyed, it would never be lost.
Yeah. You know, it's so powerful, Glenda. It really, really is. You say in the introduction that the real images gathered dust as generations passed away and their lives became intangible memories devoured by the labyrinth of time. So
let me interrupt to say to Glenda, the reason this is so intriguing to Kay, she's from Elizabeth, New Jersey. And I think she was in her mid-50s before she ever was south of Elizabeth, New Jersey. So she's looking at this, at these pictures as if to say, wow, look at this.
Glenda, now you know I have been sharing information with you for a long period of time.
But you know what, this little, because I was curious, would people like my age and older be the only ones that's interested? And I showed it to a young lady, and I think she was like 20 or 21 at the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she's an American, but she spent most of her time in her mother raised basically her in Paris. And, you know, she's back in the United States. And I said, like, what do you think of this? You know, what do you think of the book? And she was like, wow, you know, because she had never seen any.
Yeah.
And she said, it's good to see because at least you know we weren't living in a box.
Absolutely.
Oh, that was her exact words. And
yeah.
What happens is young people have no clue about how beautiful, you know, we dressed. And you know, the people, I mean, we don't really know their histories and what they did for a living. But when they went out on the town, they were dressed.
Mm-hmm. This is so true. But, Glenda, you know, there is something that I want to read here because I have to tell people, too, something that I haven't mentioned. And before I do that, I'm going to give the number out again for people to call because they are going to want to call you. And the number is 323 here in the studio, 323-679-0906. That's 323-679-0906.
I have to do the same type of book for black men because the black men were really sharp back in the day, too.
Well, you'll have to wait till I buy a necktie.
He is known for not
wearing really great pictures. I know you have some sharp pictures.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. But listen, you also wrote the book Jolly Musso's. Is it Jolly Musso's Drum?
Musso's Drum, right.
Okay, but I don't want to get into that right now. I want to do this. You're a fantastic author. You're a fantastic writer. You have raised over $50 million for different agencies that you work for in New York. You were the head of Olympic Vision and a few other things that I'm going to be talking about as we go into all this that you've done. But before this, I think this is a very important part to tell people. Now, you have been writing books for how many years?
1998, so that's 12 years.
Am I right?
Excuse me?
And still writing, am I right?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. All right. Now, I'm going to read this, and you'll recognize what I'm going to get into right now. The name of the poem is Eyewitness, and the name of this book is Blind Light by Glenda R. Taylor. It says, Eyewitness, visions to visions. Who can I tell? In whom can I confide? Some fear, some leer, some tear with laughter. Who can I tell? Some hear, some peer. Some say dear, and so, while others near think it's a bit queer, trying to understand what year this has placed me in. Here I am, near it is not, steer I do, until the peer changes course. Now, I have to go to call, but I want to tell you this. This book is Blind Light, and I should tell people that you are legally blind. Am I right?
Yep, yeah, that's true.
Tell us how that happened, Glenda. Because this just happened not too long ago, if I understand.
Well, it's actually 10 years.
Really? Has it been that long?
Yeah, it was May 22nd, 2001.
Uh-huh.
I was overproducing spinal fluid by 10%, and it has nowhere to go but behind your optical nerve.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, you know, it just took my vision. It blurred my vision.
Yeah. So it also has here written by Sophia Stewart, I think it is. It says, this extraordinary volume of poetry interprets and transcribes a metaphysical reality. What happens when one loses her vision, her eyesight, in the midst of a successful and challenging career? What does the mind experience? How does the mind translate reality? Is survival possible? Does one gain access to the sixth sense? Blind Light answers all these questions and more, and it gives insight into that world beyond the physical. This book and many of your other books, it's an amazing flight into territories rarely explored by the written word. Wonderful. We're going to go to a call, Glenda. Is that okay?
Yes, yeah, sure.
Okay. The number for you to call, everyone, is 323-679-0906. Do we have a caller?
Hello?
Yes, hello. You're on the air.
Hi. I had a question about, because I've actually seen Glenda's book, and I think it's a fantastic book, by the way. You did a great job of compiling so much of the history of fashion fashion sense of women of color. It's just a beautiful, it's like flipping through the pages of a museum almost, which if you can imagine, that's just fantastic. But my question, and I was listening to the conversation that you and Kay Gus and you were having, And he made a very interesting comment about women on 125th Street and, you know, what's indicative of the South and the different sensibilities. But what I found in the book is that it doesn't matter, like, the fabric or the cut of the dress. It just seemed to be a certain amount of decorum that just doesn't exist today. It's not that women can't look elegant, but it's like there was such a care that was taken. What do you think is the difference between the sensibilities then and those now, where it seems like everything is about how much flesh you can actually show? What do you think it kind of says about the changing times?
Maybe I'm conservative. I think that the way they dress is so beautiful and so elegant, and I think we have just totally gone in the opposite direction. And I just find it a little bit sad because, you know, to me it should just be some moment where you could just kind of dress up and be beautiful and elegant, and it's just, you know, not about your body, but it's about the style.
Mm-hmm. And
maybe isn't it about the
presence that you portray?
Hmm?
Isn't it about the presence of that particular person? Their personality?
There's certain, like, style. Like, say, for example, with the entertainers, when you see some of the people from the past, I mean, when you think, like, say, even the generation of, like, Nick Ashford and Valerie Simpson and that period in the Motown era, I remember, like, when Dinah Ross used to come on television, and everybody, and she used to always be like the last person, whether it was the Academy Awards to sing or perform, and everybody was waiting because they just knew she was going to be fabulous and she was going to look a certain way. And now it's just kind of like everybody's showing just everything, and it's, I mean, the outfits are just, you know. But then, like I said, maybe I'm conservative and maybe I'm stuck in the past. But it's just, to me, it was just so beautiful the way they dressed and the way they presented themselves. And now, you know, people come and you're supposed to see them perform. And some people don't even have the vocal ability of, like, a Patti LaBelle or Whitney Houston. And they get on stage and they just, you know, they could be dressed in their jeans and you're supposed to enjoy that. So, you know,
okay.
I don't know. To me, there's quality and there's quality. Quality is, and that's what the book, you know, Jalo Musso's Drum is about. It's,
yes.
You have the voice of, like, Patti LaBelle, Lena Horne, Marian Anderson. I mean, those people, Etta James, Ruth Brown, you know, Sissy Hughes, those are voices. You know, and in the same way you had voices in those days where people who could, Dionne Warwick, they could sing, when they dressed and where they performed, it was like, wow. You know, they didn't have to show their bodies or, you know, shake their butts. And nowadays, young people, you know, it's just so commercialized that we've just gotten to the point where we're losing quality.
Yeah. Glenda, listen, I want you to hold on, because when we come back, we're coming back with you and your latest book, The Jalo Musso's Drum, African-American Female Entertainers as Cultural Historians and Griots. Stay with us. We'll be right back, everyone, with Glenda Taylor, author and writer. We are back. Kay Thompson and
Gus Henningberg.
And we're talking to Glenda
Taylor.
Glenda Taylor.
Why? You read the poem Blind Light. Did you want to ask me something about that?
Blind Light?
Yeah,
yes. Why did you like that? And what were you, you know, there were so many, when I read Blind Light, you know, there were so many different poetry and pieces of prose that I could tell your mood from when you started writing this to when you ended.
Oh.
It's like you grew from being a, you know, it sounded like it was a little anger. It was a little depression. It was a little sadness. And then as you kept writing, you became stronger.
Right.
Now, am I getting a wrong feeling?
You have it right. What happened is I really hadn't seriously written anything for, you know, a long time after that happened. And I hadn't written so much about it. And I decided to just write about the experience, but I did it in the form of poetry. And like you said, you actually got the walk from the beginning when I realized, like, you know, like, what is this? Is this real? You know, I still have not accepted it. I know it, but I don't have, you know, a consciousness of being blind.
Uh-huh.
And you just basically experienced that walk from, you know, realizing that this is, you know, seeming reality until, you know, I just said, okay, what am I supposed to learn from this lesson?
Well, let me just inject one quick thought. There was a time when the female artists, when people went away talking about what they sounded like. And then the current generation, people go away saying, did you see what she was wearing?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very fundamental difference in terms of the audience as to whether you're looking at them or listening to them when they're performing.
Mm-hmm.
And how they are dressed is a major factor.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the caller right now. You're on the air. Hello. Are you there?
Hello.
Yes, hello. How are you?
Hey, Kay. This is your savior, filmmaker. I want to tell you, you guys sound terrific.
Really? Great.
Oh, absolutely. And I want to give a shout-out to Ty Jr., who's actually taking my job for the night as the engineer. He's doing a great job.
That's awesome.
And Shauna, so it sounds really great. But I wanted to ask Glenda, in her opinion, what is lost when we don't have the images that you see in this book, kind of going, you know, more mainstream, when people can get a sense of, I guess, who they are? What in your estimation has been lost by our community, by the lack of these images? And by the way, I applaud you for putting these images together and putting it out there.
Well, thank you. I think it's our history. I mean, it's literally our history. And I think we have a false image of our history because we're only looking at, and when I say a history, I'm talking about the late 1800s from 1950, because after the 60s and the 70s and the images started to change with, you know, shows like the Gus Hennigberg Show and those different types of shows, you saw a variety of the images. But for that period, it's kind of like we jumped from slavery and then, you know, we went to the Civil Rights Movement. And that in between from 1900 to 1950s, that's our history. I mean, and that's a story that it's kind of like in the dark and the closet. And we don't really know as much. Like when I started studying, I didn't know the contribution of African-American women to American history in the early 1900s until I really started studying. And I was saying, like, wow. And it was all these women, you know, like, we had a woman whose name was Doris Beasley, who was like the equivalent of Oprah Winfrey in her day. And these were people I didn't even know who they were. And I just think that it's just important that this book be done for black men as well, because the image that we keep in our mind are what we see on film. And the images that we see on film, with, you know, with, there are a few exceptions because, you know, we had Lena Horne and people like that. But most of the images are just, you know, Beulah and not that anything is wrong with, you know, Aunt Jemima.
Unflattering, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But and this is the truth. This is the reality. This is the way these people dressed. And so why shouldn't we know this? And why shouldn't young people know it?
Sure. It's our history.
If we don't keep it, if we don't put our history out there, if we don't take this book and release it outside of, you know, the outside of our closets and outside of the country, who's going to do it?
Is this a self-published book, or where can we get it?
You can get it from Amazon.com.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And there are three books. There's Blind Light by Glenda Taylor, and there is the book of Truth Beyond Illusion. We haven't finished with her. I'm going to be telling all this in a little while. Also, Glenda Taylor and her mother, Mary Taylor. And the one that I'm going to be talking about now, the Jalamuso's Drum, which is, wait until you hear this. I mean, this is a powerful book.
Well, okay,
but before we even go in,
Gus
wants
that,
to get in.
Quick question.
Yeah.
How did Ty sneak into our show?
I'm everywhere, Gus.
Ty's bored, that's why. Hi, Ty. but really, seriously, this book, Ty, you can't just get one of Glenda's books, okay?
Right.
By the way, she's really best known in the New York City area for her pioneering work with philanthropic organizations. She has authored proposals which resulted in funding for over $50 million, by the way. And she's executive director of Urban Strategies, and her administrative and writing skills were responsible for catapulting the organization into a multi-million-dollar corporation that provides shelters, daycare centers, educational programs, and apartment buildings to thousands of people in Brooklyn. As a matter of fact.
Beautiful.
And
wow.
Then when Glenda left Urban Strategies and to create her own charitable organization, that's when we met, and that's when you set up Olympic Vision, which was located in Harlem. And you provided over 5,000 youth and adults with educational, job placement, mental health, and social services. So, Glenda, you've been busy
all
life.
Well, Glenda, I think that there's a nexus between what you're doing in terms of writing and what I'm doing with film, and maybe we can sit and talk about how we can come together and bring these images to more of our people. But keep on doing what you're doing, and you guys sound terrific, and I love the show. It's the best.
Good. We're glad. Okay, you wanted to get in here too, Gus Honeyberg?
No, I just wanted to see how Ty got in here. I got in here, but I don't know how he got in here.
Well, now,
go ahead.
Glenda, before we go any further, now, look, this is, I find this book, your latest book, Jalamuso's Drum, absolutely fascinating. I am so glad somebody wrote it. And lo and behold, it's my friend who wrote it, Glenda Taylor. I mean, it's just absolutely fantastic. Well, I'm not going to say anything about it. Why don't you tell people what it's about?
Well, basically, it's African-American female entertainers as cultural historians. And it's basically telling the value.
Wait a minute. You're saying African-American females as cultural historians, right?
Female entertainers. It's specifically about female entertainers.
Yeah. Now, why do you call them cultural historians?
Because when you read their autobiographies, there's a fascinating amount of history, American history, in those books.
Yeah.
And people kind of like put entertainers, you know, they look at them as entertainers, they look at them for their talent, but they're not seriously, as far as the academic and the scholarly community, paying attention to the valuable pieces of information that they have in their autobiographies.
Mm-hmm.
And what I actually did that for my master's thesis. I was saying how people like Marian Anderson, when you read her autobiography, you learn a lot about American history.
Mm-hmm.
You learn about how people thought during that period. And just like, for example, I didn't know until I read her autobiography that the first real march on Washington was in 1939 when she stood up there before the in front of the Lincoln Memorial and performed in front of thousands of people because they would not let her perform. I think it was Constitutional Hall.
And that was the first African-American march?
That was considered the first march on Washington.
Wow.
And I never verified it, but I understand that Martin Luther King was in the audience when that happened. And
uh-huh.
I never verified that. I never checked to see if, you know, that was true. But she stood there, and Eleanor Roosevelt and a lot of people, because she was internationally known.
Yeah.
She was an internationally acclaimed star, and they refused to let her perform in Constitutional Hall because she was black. And Eleanor Roosevelt was very upset about it, and a lot of people were upset about it, and they had her perform in front of the Lincoln Memorial, which was relatively new at the time. Mm-hmm. And that was considered, you know, all this group of people, and it was a free performance, and everybody came and listened to her perform.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so much history. Like when you read Lena Horne's autobiography,
yeah,
or Ruth Brown, Etta James tells a lot of details about Sam Cooke's death, because she actually went, you know, when he died, and she,
yeah,
heard it on the radio, she ran to the hotel. She followed the trial, inquest, everything that was going on. And when you read these autobiographies, it's just amazing, you know, pieces of information that, of course, has to be verified, but it's information that should not be discarded and looked at as, this is just like a public relations tool for an entertainer, because it's a lot more than that.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, in your book, when you say you're talking about the entertainers, for instance, you talk about Lena Horne, Darlene, who was it, Toni Morrison, Nikki Giovanni, Bell Hooks, Jean Noble, Alice Walker, Paula Gibbons, and so many others. And you say that entertainers and celebrities have always had an influence on public opinion, and their images and words affect the lives of the masses. Yet their words and their art mirror reality, and in the case of the African-American female entertainer, preserve a vast amount of undocumented history and data known only within the confines of the black community. Elaborate on that, Glenda.
Like, say, for example, when you read Aretha Franklin's autobiography, Aretha Franklin is the queen of soul.
Yes.
And when you listen to her autobiography, she's naming, and Sissy Houston does the same thing. They're
mm-hmm.
naming, well, Sissy Houston is different. She gives you great detail about certain parts of, you know, where she came from and her family's trek to New York.
And she has that in her book, by the way.
Very serious.
Uh-huh. She has that in her book, by the way.
Yeah, it's an excellent. She has an excellent autobiography, and Aretha Franklin names a lot of people, and she says, "Well, this person influenced this person and this person," and she's making comparisons, and she's telling you the style, and she's
yeah.
saying this person, you know, died at this particular age, and she's giving you a vast amount of information, and of course, scholars have to verify and check and date, but this is information that if you're studying, different people, you have actually the roots, and you have history. You have a lot of history. Even Lena Horne with an Eartha Kitt. She tells
yeah.
you, when she went to the White House, how and why she got blacklisted. This is, this is American history.
But where did the name, I've got to take another break, Glenda, but we're coming back to you. But Jalamuso's drum, what does that mean? What is Jalamuso?
That's a West African word for it. It tells you in the book, but if a cultural historian, storyteller, poet, singer, dancer, it's all inclusive, but primarily it means storyteller and cultural historian.
I see. And did these entertainers perceive of themselves as cultural historians and activists?
I think in some ways they do, and in some ways they don't. Marian Anderson definitely did, and it really depends on who the person is.
Yeah.
But they're telling the story, and it's just amazing. Well, a lot of them were activists, and they were very involved. Like, say, for example, Nina Simone, someone like Nina Simone, and they're telling the story, and they give a lot of details and of information that, scholars should really be paying attention to.
They need this book. But, Glenn, we do have to take a break, and we're going to go for this break as soon as Gus says what you were going to say. What?
Just to make a quick observation.
Mm-hmm.
If you would poll the public,
mm-hmm.
giving the names of Nina Simone and the women you named,
mm-hmm.
and ask about what they know about them, what the people you're interviewing know about them, they would know what they sound like when they sing.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
They do not perceive them to be historians or
yeah.
that.
Yeah, but they really are. They're
they
historians.
Really are.
And they're entertainers. And when you talk about their lives, in fact, Glenda has all this in this book. And Glenda, we're going to come back to you, and we're going to find out where we can get these books.
One
Everyone should have these books in your library.
Before the break.
Yeah.
Are we going to get a cut from this book?
Of course.
Okay, I'll just check it.
Glenda, we'll be right back, everyone. Kay and Gus here talking to Glenda Taylor, author, writer, historian, cultural historian. We'll be right back. Any further, I want to tell everybody, Glenda, where can people get your books again?
You can get it at Amazon.com.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, you know what? The thing that's important, I just wanted to say about the entertainers like Diane Carroll's book on The Legs of the Last to Go, and Eartha Kitt has several books. But what's really great about them is they're international. They have traveled all over the world. They have seen the world through the eyes of an American, but they've also gone and been in, you know, countries on probably all seven continents. And that's what makes their story fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know,
especially that of Eartha Kitt.
Hmm?
Especially that of Eartha Kitt.
Oh, yeah. And Eartha Kitt was a thinker. You know, the way she wrote her book is some people you could tell that is somewhat controlled by the period, and yeah. Also you could tell, like when it was written in the early 1900s, and then when it came more forward, people were able to say more. And Eartha Kitt, you could just see that her thoughts, and her story is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Her story is really amazing because Eartha Kitt she was just raised, and she had a very hard, tough life. Josephine Baker also.
You know, I want to quote a friend of yours, professor of literature and novelist Elizabeth Nunez, whose books I'm familiar with, fantabulous writer. She believes that only a writer of fiction can tell the truth in her works. She asserts that autobiographers are constrained in their relationships. Nunez believes that what one does not say in an autobiography can be said in its purest form in fiction. And then she says, while one may argue that Nunez does not make distinction between the reality in the autobiography versus the historical authenticity creative designed in fiction, it is intellectually stimulating to explore the diverse views on the subject. Heavy intellectual. I love that.
Yeah.
I have to really say this is the three books you can't do without. And we haven't even touched on, you know, all the stuff that's in this book.
Okay, let me share a personal experience.
Okay.
As you know, I was born on the campus at Tuskegee.
Mm-hmm.
And when visiting artists would come to the campus, they would stay at my house, at my family house.
Mm-hmm.
And all I knew was we had a visitor because I had to move out of my bedroom. But when I would get up and go to breakfast, there would be this strange person sitting at the breakfast table. And it was everybody from Eartha Kitt to Paul Robeson people who in those years were
General
invited
Davis.
To the black college campuses
yeah.
to perform.
Uh-huh.
And they couldn't stay at a hotel in Tuskegee, Alabama, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a long time to figure out who these people were. Sometimes I had to write my mother a note and say, "Who is that?" And it would come back and it would say, "Marian Anderson, go look it up."
Wow. And a little bit more about...
Do you have an autobiography?
No.
Not yet.
We're waiting. Because those are great stories, and those stories should not be lost.
Absolutely.
And I know, you're a historian. You've recorded our history. You've done a magnificent job of recording our history. And we have to, have the behind-the-scenes story.
Did you hear that, Gus Henningberg?
I've been there giving my order.
Because you know what? Now, what I tell people is sometimes, I guess it's kind of you have to lock yourself up in a room, but they have this program called Dragon Naturally Speaking, and it has to get used to your voice. But you can just go in that room and talk into the mic, and it types everything for you.
Yeah, I have to do that. I know Gus has to do it, but I'll tell you.
You have to do it too. I'm waiting for both of your autobiographies. You have, the two of you, you said you were born in what year? It was in the 30s. You've also had 80 years of African American history that because you know your history and you know the history of your parents.
Yeah.
And if you don't do it, it would never be the same if your children wrote it. It's not going to be the same. Lena Horne did her book, but Lena Horne's daughter also did the history of the family. But it's different when Lena Horne does it. It's different when Kay Thompson or Gus Henningberg does it.
Yeah. Boy.
Because you're going to have details and you're going to have memories of, say, Eartha Kitt or, Paul Robeson. You're going to have a memory that, is just it's recorded nowhere.
Yeah.
Well, let me inject this very quickly. When my mother or father would get up and leave the kitchen table and go to get something out of the refrigerator, I would get up and follow them and say, "Who is that?" The guest who was sitting there that I'd never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And invariably, I had heard the name before, but didn't know what they looked like or whatever. The point is that my parents then made me, not the same day, but go to the library and get all the information you can get about the person you had breakfast with yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Now, see that? But also what we want to tell people, too, is we are in the process with BW Moving Images, Ty Washington here, of putting these different stories and interviews that we've done over the years. And this combined is over about 45 years of, broadcast experience of interviews.
I wasn't 45 years.
Oh, yes, you were.
No, I wasn't. I worked.
I'll be the first to start buying it.
What did you say?
I said, I'll be the first to start buying it and collecting it.
I know.
That's history. That's true history.
Yeah, it is. It is. But listen,
the advantage is from the perspective of a journalist.
Yeah, how about that?
That's a journalist perspective. And journalists are considered credible historians.
Yeah, but I want to clear the air. I am not a journalist. I have never considered myself a journalist. But
you're a broadcast journalist.
Well, if you want to put that tag on it, sure, we are broadcast journalists. But I was an educator first. And I said,
it's just like Catherine Dunham. Catherine Dunham was an anthropologist. She was a choreographer. She owned her own dance company. She wrote several books. She used pseudonyms writing her books. She had her master's and she was a true anthropologist. And she said in her autobiography how she would actually participate in ceremonies in Haiti to watch the dance. So what I'm saying is, so you're an educator and you're a journalist.
Yeah, well, okay.
And you don't have a job.
Glenn, did you hear him?
You're a storyteller. You're a cultural historian.
Glenda Taylor, it's been great. We want you back again and again and again.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Okay.
It's nice talking to both of you.
We're going to take a break. Ash
Simpson
coming up on music.
Okay. Hello?
I can't say
words. A thousand stars, see how they shine. I see your face when I see mine.
Alamuso's Drum and Truth Beyond Illusion. I'm Kay Thompson.
I'm Gus Henningberg.
Joining you next week. Thank you.
danger, danger, danger.